for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. 8 million American homeowners are either behind on their mortgage payments or have already begun the foreclosure process. 11 million households are worth less than what is owed on their mortgage. Joining me in the studio to talk about the administration's latest effort to help homeowners and stabilize the real estate market, Washington Post reporter Renee Merle. Ed Andrews, he's correspondent with thephysicaltimes.com and the author of Busted, and Julia Gordon with the Center for Responsible Lending. I know many of you will have your own questions about what's happening, perhaps not only with your mortgage, but your neighbor's mortgage. Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can join us on Facebook or Twitter. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Renee, I wonder if I could start with you. Talk about why the administration has decided to revamp this whole homeowners rescue plan.
Well, the administration launched its massive foreclosure prevention effort almost nearly a year ago, making home affordable, and it originally intended to help up to 4 million homeowners save their homes. It's not on track to do anything close to that. It's the economic conditions have changed significantly since the administration thought up its program. Unemployment is a much bigger issue for homeowners than when they launched their program. When they launched it, the issue really was homeowners with subprime loans. Now it's about homeowners who don't have a job. And so it requires a different set of tools to address that. Also, when the administration launched this effort a year ago, I remember going and talking to certain administration officials about the number of homeowners who owe more than their home is worth, known as being underwater. Their attitude at that time was, this program is aimed at making their mortgages affordable, not necessarily restoring people to equity or making their home a good investment. This is just about making their mortgage affordable. They realize that they can't do that either, that some people will default on their mortgage just because they are underwater, or it makes them more likely to default later on because they're underwater on their mortgage. So they're having to rethink the way that they approach this problem. They realize that the approach that they had just was outmoded. It was old.
So, Julia Gordon, give us some of the specifics of this approach.
This approach will allow unemployed homeowners, people who have no income except their unemployment benefits, to get into the HAMP program and achieve monthly payments of 31% of their income, their unemployment benefit income. And this is new because before then, unless you had guaranteed income for 9 months, which, you know, for most unemployed people, your unemployment benefits don't come with that guarantee, those people have been locked out of this process entirely, which is ironic since, as Renee mentioned, unemployment is such a big problem now, causing people to have trouble paying their mortgage. So that's one important change. The other important change is that these programs are now going to provide incentives for lenders to write down those principal balances.
What kinds of incentives?
Monetary incentives, primarily, to participate in this program. And in some cases, the lender who has the first mortgage on a home might be wanting to do that, but there's this second mortgage on the home. And another really important component of these programs is they try to address those so-called second liens and try to get them out of the way. They've been a real sticking point for getting this stuff done.
When you say get them out of the way, what does that mean?
Either to modify them so that they don't serve as a drag on the homeowner's income for making their payments on everything, or, in many cases, incentives to extinguish them entirely, pay a certain number of cents on the dollar so the lender can just write off that second lien for a homeowner who's, you know, underwater past the level of that loan.
Now, I gather that the previous program succeeded in helping probably about 116,000 homeowners, Ed Andrews. How many people does this one propose to make good on?
More people.
Lots more.
More people. That's about all I can say at this point. I think actually the administration's latest numbers are that about 170,000 people have gotten permanent loan modifications, and maybe another 90,000 are in the pipeline, which is not nothing, but as Renee said, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the overall problem. Six million people, I believe, now 60 days or more delinquent on their mortgage, and a total of about 1.1 or 1.3 million people have gotten these temporary loan modifications. And basically, you know, what's been happening for, you know, the last year, as this program got up, you know, thousands upon thousands of people were getting these trial loan modifications, only to find out that, you know, at the end of 3 or 5 months, they've been rejected for a permanent deal. A 3 or 4, 5 month assistance doesn't really get you very far if you're fundamentally unable to make that payment. You need some kind of permanent fix. So the permanent fixes have been very, very few and far between.
So here's what I want to understand. Surely the banks can't simply say, well, we're going to be the good guys in all this. We're going to be just as generous as we can. What are the incentives to the mortgage lenders themselves, Renee?
Well, first of all, it should be said that most of this program is voluntary. So they'll do it only if they feel like they're going to get something good out of it. So they'll reduce the principal or the loan balance of a homeowner that's underwater on their mortgage and might receive 10 cents on the dollar or 20 cents on the dollar from the government, which a lot of people think is pretty rich, considering that a lot of these things might not be worth, aren't worth anything if the homeowner goes into foreclosure.
Exactly.
So they're getting paid to do something that's actually in their financial interest. So, you know, and under one part of the program that we talked about, Federal Housing Administration, FHA, will refinance people into new mortgages. And in that case, the lender does get an incentive to lower the loan balance of the homeowner. And they also get the extra incentive of getting that loan, that homeowner off their books. They will no longer have that loan on their books. And so they're basically trading the risk of having that homeowner who they think might go into foreclosure. That homeowner can't be delinquent now, but maybe they'll go into be delinquent later. They're trading that homeowner's risk with the government.
Ed.
Well, just one of the things that's infuriating to me as I've watched this stuff over the last couple of
and
years.
And experienced it.
I myself, you know, got trapped in, you know, a mortgage nightmare, taking out more than I could possibly handle, and then having my wife lose most of her income. And so I've been through this nightmare with the trial modifications, and I'm on starting my third trial modification. The process has been so tangled and confused you know, it just sort of drags on and on. I consider myself lucky. I haven't actually been rejected yet, but I can tell you that the whole effort so far is, and I have one of the better lenders, JP Morgan Chase. They're actually, you know, one of the less bad of the crowd, you know, but it has just been a complete tangle and slow moving.
Is this process going to be less tangled and more fast moving? What is your thinking, Julia?
There's no reason to believe it's going to be any less
really?
Tangled. You know, what happened last week is good in terms of the way the plan is structured. But what we've seen is a real problem with servicer capacity, mortgage servicer capacity to get this stuff done. And there's nothing in this plan that that I see is going to change the serious issue we have with that.
And so you think that this plan is going to work no better than what we've had in the past?
For the people who get through this plan, I think the solution is going to be more sustainable. I think they're going to have a better modification that can keep them in their home permanently.
But they need to get it first. They need to get it first. You mean get that bank to agree to allow them to participate?
Right. There are two buckets of homeowners dealt with in Friday's announcement. One is people who are already delinquent and meet the other eligibility requirements for the Making Home Affordable program. For those folks, they still have to get through the maze of this program. The FHA program that was announced, which is aimed at homeowners who are not behind on their mortgage, is completely voluntary for lenders and can only be accessed if your lender decides they want to access
it. And these are for people underwater, but they're not necessarily delinquent?
Exactly.
The thing about this, though, is that, and I just came back from a reporting trip to Arizona, which is sort of one of the ground zeros in all of this. But the thing that's so maddening to me is that it is in ultimately the lender's interest to modify a huge number of these mortgages rather than foreclose. And foreclosure is a really, really costly process. That said, it just doesn't happen. I'm convinced that in the aggregate, the lenders and the services really don't like loan modifications. They're willing to go along with interest rate reductions in a lot of cases because they're borrowing at really cheap rates. But they're not crazy about it, and they really, really, really hate reducing the principal amount.
Edmund Andrews, he's correspondent with the FiscalTimes.com. Short break. We'll be right back. And welcome back. We're talking about the administration's plan announced last week offering to help unemployed homeowners and offer incentives to lenders for those whose mortgages are underwater or who are behind on their mortgage payments. Here in the studio, Julia Gordon. She's with the Center for Responsible Lending. Edmund Andrews is with the FiscalTimes.com, former reporter for the New York Times and author of the book titled Busted. And Renee Merle is a reporter for the Washington Post. Here's an email that apparently a number of people are asking about: will the new policy help homeowners with mortgages that are current on their payments but underwater? Will this apply to jumbo mortgages?
Oh, it actually won't apply to jumbo mortgages, but it will apply to people who are current on their mortgage but underwater. And let me say that this is not the first time the administration has tried to address or help underwater borrowers refinance into new loans. There was also another program called HARP that allows you to refinance if you're up to 125% underwater on your mortgage. That program didn't do very much. It helped less than 200,000 people, and it was supposed to help up to 5 million. So this is like their second stab at trying to address this population of homeowners.
And what's the rationale for not helping those underwater with jumbo loans?
The only rationale for not helping homeowners with jumbo loans is that all of these programs have to be sold to the American public, and there are fairness considerations, and I'm sure we'll hear about some of those later. For loans that are under a certain amount, those are the loans that can be purchased by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That's an easy cutoff amount. It's the same cutoffs that the FHA program deals with. So it was a fairly easy choice for a lot of both programmatic and public relations reasons to choose not to include jumbo loans.
The administration basically doesn't want to say that it's helping millionaires and it also excludes investment properties or investors. So there has to be a public relations face on this. They don't want to help.
Here's an email from Will in Tampa, Florida, who says stabilizing the housing market is another term for price controls and mandatory lending. These practices help create the problem, allowing people to gain access to loans for which they normally would not be approved. Now, reality is hitting. I doubt that those who actually made profits from real estate transactions are favoring these home bailouts.
I would really take issue with that in this sense. When we're talking about principal write-downs, especially when we're talking about those for underwater loans, we're talking about bringing those mortgage amounts back into the current market reality. When banks are valuing these loans at 100 cents on the dollar, and you have a house that, say you have a $300,000 mortgage on a house that's now worth $150,000 or $200,000, you're deluding yourself. The banks are deluding themselves when they think that that's, you know, the true value. And so part of what we're talking about here is let's get back to reality. And that applies for the borrowers as well as the lenders. But there's a huge amount of self-delusion going on the part of the lenders.
Julia.
There's also a big difference between stabilizing the market and propping up the market. There's no doubt that certain types of policies, like the first-time home buyer tax credit, served in some sense to prop up prices. Stabilizing them, when you have a neighborhood with a lot of foreclosures, those foreclosures have a synergistic effect on each other and on the neighborhood. Neighboring homes begin to lose their value, even if the homeowners are current on their mortgages. The tax base of the community erodes. That impacts the schools and other municipal functions. Fire and police services become strained. And those homes' value drains in a way that is very detrimental and unnecessary if you're able to stop the bleeding, so to speak.
Who's going to pay for all this? Is the taxpayer going to foot the bill on this?
Well, the money's going to come from the $50 billion already set aside under TARP for housing. The original Obama program was to be paid for through there, but since it hasn't really done much, there's a lot of money left over. So this will be paid for through that.
But I gather that this plan is not meant to rescue all struggling homeowners.
It won't even come close. If it works as it's expected to or hoped to, it won't. There are estimates that we're going to see, 6 to 7 or even more million foreclosures over the next 3 years. This, if it works as expected, as hoped, will help up to 4 million. Homeowners avoid foreclosure. And some of those people will still lose their house. They'll have like a short sale or they'll turn over the keys to their house in a deed in lieu. So some of these people will, you know, end up moving on another way. They'll just avoid a foreclosure.
But Ed, you talked about J.P. Morgan Chase. Not all banks are going to be happy to participate.
No, they've been dragging their feet to a great extent. Bank of America, I think they as of February had offered trial loan modifications to about 26% of their delinquent borrowers. So and there are worse cases than that. There's a couple of them that were down in the 10% range. And again the trial modifications, you know, really are just a Band-Aid. What you want to do is permanently stabilize a borrower at a level that they're going to be able to keep paying.
All right. So before we open the phones, Ed, tell us about your own situation and how you found yourself getting into trouble.
Well, what happened to me was, and it's the supreme embarrassment of being a longtime economics reporter and one who actually had written about crazy loans before he took out his own. But in 2004, in the middle of a tough divorce, paid huge child support payments, so my real cash flow was very reduced. But I was eager to get remarried, and in looking around, ended up buying a house with a mortgage, an interest-only mortgage that was kind of a liar's loan. I didn't lie about my income. I literally didn't state the income. And
you did not state the income?
Yeah.
Were you not asked for your income?
You paid an extra 0.25% on the interest rate. You didn't have to state it. Those are the good old days. And, yeah, I mean, and that was not the craziest kind of loan you could get. But anyway, so I borrowed, and I was taking the huge gamble that even though my income was down, the woman I was marrying was going to be able to, you know, help fill the gap. She ran into much more difficulty about a year and a half after we got married, lost her job. So we got into a whole lot of trouble by 2008. And so come the time that the Obama administration comes in, we started trying to look into various alternatives. The first one that J.P. Morgan Chase offered, after a lot of negotiations with it, I could pay the previous mortgage at about the same rate, but that I would get it would be a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. I would lock in a rate at about 5%. They weren't going to lose a dime on it, but they could offer me the lower rate because they were borrowing it an incredibly lower rate at that time. That got tangled up in bureaucratic mess, so we went to a different trial loan modification. And then in December, I left the Times, so my situation changed. And now I'm into loan modification version 3.0.
Wow. And what are your prospects?
Well, I hope that, you know, we do in fact get a sustainable modification. At the end of the day, if we do, I suspect I'll be paying almost what I was paying originally, but, you know, I'll have loaded in all those back payments and penalties, and it will be a fixed rate loan instead of an exploding one, which was the kind I had before.
Will the value of your house be diminished in the process?
Well, as so many other people, my house is worth a lot less than it was. It's worth a little less. It's worth $20,000 or $30,000 at least less than the amount of the outstanding mortgages. I don't think that's enough to walk away from the house, but I do seriously think at times that it might be a better use of my money to just let them take the house and move into an apartment.
Wow. Would you really do that?
Sure. Absolutely. I would have done it a couple of years ago if we didn't have kids that really wanted to stay in the house.
Yeah.
But my children are in college. Patty's girl is 11 years old, and she's getting ready to move into middle school, so we're thinking about it.
How many people are walking away from their homes that are somewhat underwater, Renee?
I don't think there are any definitive numbers. It's really anecdotal. You know, when the lenders and the banks started talking to me about this more than a year and a half ago, I thought they were lying. I didn't think that people would
actually... people walking away.
That people will just walk away from their investment.
Right.
But I think it is actually happening more now, especially not just Ed is not that underwater. He's not in the most dire situation. There are people who owe twice as much as their home is worth and are in places that realistically they will not regain equity in their home for 10, 15, 20 years, if ever, especially in those places that are hardest hit by the market, by the downturn, some parts of California, Arizona, and Florida. I think that you're seeing it more in those places. But again, there aren't like definitive numbers. It's really a hard thing to track. But there has been some research that has shown that it's happening more and more, especially for people who are severely underwater.
What about the banks holding the second mortgages and the banks holding the first mortgages? Is there a rift going on between them, Julia?
Oh, yeah. They're at a bit of a standoff. Many of the first mortgages we're talking about were the so-called securitized mortgages, the mortgages that got sliced and diced on Wall Street and turned into these mortgage-backed securities that we've heard so much about. Most of the second loans are held by a bank in their own portfolio. About half of these second loans are held by the four big banks, by Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citi. So there's been this interesting situation where some of the investors in these mortgage-backed securities claim that they would be interested in right-sizing the mortgage, the first lien mortgage, but they don't want to do that if the second lien holder isn't also going to take a hit, because the whole point of investing in something that's senior rather than junior is you're supposed to get first crack at whatever's left. So the banks, on the other hand, claim that these second mortgages have actually been performing pretty well relative to the first mortgages, which is kind of a weird situation. But that's left us in this real game of chicken.
Julia Gordon of the Center for Responsible Lending, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We'll open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Miami Beach, Florida. Good morning, Rachel. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question. I'm calling from one of the worst-hit areas, as you probably know. I just want to know, what will the banks do? When will attitude change? I know they were bailed out, but it just seems like if you don't want to become delinquent, if you say, look, I don't want to become delinquent. I want to help. I want to do something before I fall behind. What can I do? The attitude is, and I've heard this, they don't care. They don't want to hear from you. They only say don't pay, and then maybe we can see what we can do. Why is this being allowed to happen?
Renee.
They don't care until you fall behind.
All right. Renee.
What she's addressing is that banks have had a really hard time defining what imminent default is. Under the Obama program, you're supposed to help homeowners even before they become delinquent. But it's defined as imminent default. They're at risk of becoming delinquent later. The banks have had a hard time defining what that is. And so in a lot of cases, I've heard from homeowner after homeowner, they are being told, we'll miss a payment or two, and then we can get to you. I mean, that also feeds into the situation where a lot of delinquent, the banks are overwhelmed. They just don't have the staff to deal with all the delinquent homeowners out there. And so they rather help somebody who's delinquent than not delinquent.
Julia.
I just want to say to everybody listening today, don't become delinquent if you are not already delinquent. It is a bad idea. There are programs to help people who are not yet delinquent. You will get a better deal. Your credit score will be in better shape. And there are many misguided or poorly trained staff out there at the banks that will tell you that you should go ahead and miss these payments in order to get in their programs. Do not listen to them. If you don't know what to do next, please find a HUD-certified housing counselor or somebody with training who can help you.
Because if you do miss that first or second payment, what's likely to happen?
Given the rate at which people are making it through, once you don't pay and try to get into these programs, you could get into a long period of not paying. Arrearages will pile up. You'll get fees upon fees upon fees. and your credit score is going to take a large hit.
Okay, so Rachel, explain to me why you're thinking that you ought to fall behind.
Because the bank will not work with us in any way. They don't want to hear. We pay everything. We've always paid everything. We've never had any issues at all. But this is something we might need some help with. They don't want to hear from us.
When you say you might need some help, is your house underwater?
Say that again? What were you saying?
Is your house underwater?
We are not underwater yet, but there's so many other things. You know, as you know, the market, everything went down, and we need more cash. And this is something we've paid everything else. We've done everything else. And we've heard from other people that if you miss a payment, maybe they'll work with us.
Rachel, I think you better think again. If you've just heard from Julia Gordon of the Center for Responsible Lending, if you miss a payment or two, you're going to make big trouble for yourself. Don't try it. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org. By the Avis Family Foundation, supporting expanded foreign news online and on air. And by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. This is NPR.
They co-founded Newman's Own Food Line and a free camp for seriously ill children. Writer A.E. Hutchner and the Hollywood icon Paul Newman were friends for over half a century. Recollections of off-screen adventures with the late actor. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back, and we're talking about the government's new program to assist homeowners who are in trouble one way or another. And here's an email from someone who apparently is facing some difficulty. Jim says, I have a mortgage originated with a higher rate than it should have been with my good FICO score 2 years ago. Since then, my mortgage has gone underwater. I've had a reduction in income. I've managed to stay afloat with help from family members. I have continued to stay current. I'm looking for a rate reduction and or a balance reduction. My loan has been sold to Fannie Mae, and City Mortgage is the servicer. I've repeatedly filled out applications, and originally City Mortgage shifted me to CCCS, Consumer Service Agency, and they recommended foreclosure in November, yet I am current due to the pooling of funds. I can also never get hold of anyone on the phone who is remotely helpful. Julia.
Jim, you're a perfect candidate for some of the refinancing programs that the government has tried to put in place. You have a Fannie Mae mortgage, so you should, unless you're more than 125% loan-to-value ratio, you should be able to get a refinancing at a good rate through the Home Affordable Refinance Program. You also sound like a candidate for this new FHA program, which you should be asking your lender about. Again, if anybody is telling you to go into foreclosure, that does not sound like the right advice, and I urge you to keep trying and maybe seek different
advice. All right, but where does Jim go?
Well, he should first go to his servicer and ask about these specific programs, though I would say that while the Home Affordable Refinance Program, HARP, has been around for a year, it's going to take some time for the FHA refinancing program to be up and running. These things take a little bit of time to establish. But it sounds like he was starting with a good place with the Consumer Credit Counseling Service. These are nonprofit housing counselors that should be able to help you and advise you on the best way to get a loan modification. So the two avenues really are through your servicer, through you might also, you know, and through a nonprofit.
A couple of things. And I just came back from this trip to Arizona where I talked to a lot of people who are in this strait. The counseling services, the HUD-approved counseling services, there are a number of them in any city, are overwhelmed. And so even if their hearts are in the right places and they can, in theory, help, they're backed up. A lot of them are really backed up. And this leads to the second point, which is that you will undoubtedly run across many, many companies that are advertising, you know, for a fee up front, you know, we'll help you negotiate.
Sure.
And the experiences with that are just overwhelmingly horrible.
Dreadful.
If you know, and a lot of them are just outright scams. Some of them run by former lenders and brokers.
Interesting. To Heartland, Michigan. Good morning, Joe. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to just echo what that last caller said. My loan, I went through my service provider, and then they told me that Fannie Mae just will not work with me. I'm here in Michigan. I purchased my house for about $220,000. You can't sell it for $110,000 right now. I've always made my payments. I've been paying on the house for about 5 years now. They won't even drop my PMI. I've got to wait 14 years just to drop my PMI. That's when it automatically goes out. The service provider, he told me, go ahead and miss two or three payments, then they'll contact me. If you try to contact a service provider or try to contact Fannie Mae, you get nowhere. The only way that you get any action or any kind of phone call back to you is if you don't pay. And we're encouraging Americans. I bet you a large portion of the people who are going into foreclosure are going into foreclosure because they're underwater like myself. I mean, you've got Ed there on your panel. He's just 20 or 30,000 in the water, and he's talking about moving into an apartment. When you've lost half the value of your house and you see everybody walking away, what's your incentive? This program is not a program. It's like smoke.
Renee.
Well, unfortunately, it sounds like he falls, he's too underwater to take advantage of one of the key refinancing programs that the administration has. It will help people up to 125% underwater on their mortgage, but it sounds like he's more like 150 or something. So he's just too far underwater for that type of program. But, you know, again, I would echo what Julia said about not becoming delinquent purposely until you, you know, period. But, you know, and just to continue to try him, he still might be eligible for this FHA refinancing program. The problem he also has is in Detroit, where home prices have fallen so much, and Detroit is, they have economic problems outside of the, you know, what's causing the housing downturn. So it's going to be a really long time before he's able to regain equity or homeowners like him.
What about this so-called forbearance provision? What's that all about, Renee?
So for unemployed borrowers, the administration is trying to encourage them to give them 3 months of forbearance. That can mean lowering your payment to 31% of your unemployment benefits, or just with, you know, stopping your payments for at least three months, but up to 6 months. So that's a forbearance. The thing about forbearance is that you do have to repay that amount that you're not
with interest.
Is it with interest, Julia? Yeah. It's tacked on to the loan balance, right. But you just get a little bit of breathing room.
I see.
The thing is, the industry can do this already. The administration, though, is trying to set some industry standards because it's not done uniformly.
All right. To Henry County, Indiana. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Diane. I am a realtor, and I cover the northeast Indianapolis area, the counties north and east of there. I work about five different counties. And I want to encourage people in general to get information about their area, their zip code, what's going on with that type, their type of home, and not assume that that they're not going to be able to sell. I'm working on several short sales currently, listings that I have. And, you know, sometimes we don't have to sell short. Sometimes the market for your particular type of house is strong enough to where we can actually get what we need out of the house to clear your mortgage. And, you know, if you plan to be in the house for 10 to 15 years after you moved there or after you refinanced and leveraged out, if you plan to be there for that long to begin with, real estate is a long-term investment. And when we're in a market where we're not so much in a bubble, so our percentages in decrease haven't seen what bubble markets have seen, and each individual consumer needs to get the information about their market and consult market specialists in their area and use the things that you know, use your lenders that you're already, go to your banks, have conversations with professionals in finance and get as much of a broad spectrum of information about your particular situation in your area, and then act accordingly. Don't just act on general information about snippets on the news that are a broad term for what's going on in the country.
Julia.
I think that's good advice, and people should research their particular situation before they make assumptions or before they go and tell their servicer information that may not be right. But something I want to say about short sales is that there is a new program through Making Home Affordable to help facilitate short sales. Short sales have, in some cases, been difficult just because it's been just as hard for the realtor to get through to the servicer and get the stuff they need as it is for the homeowner.
Explain exactly what happens in a short sale.
In a short sale, that means you sell your home. There's someone who wants to buy your home, but the amount they're going to pay isn't going to cover everything you owe on your mortgage because home values have declined. People who want to move, you know, you're moving because you lost your job and you found a job in a different area, or, you know, you're going to school or for whatever other reason you want to move, it's very important to allow people to buy and sell homes when they need to, which means lenders should be helping people sell short to the extent that they know that they would be worse off in a foreclosure situation.
All right,
anyway.
Tell me what happens if the individual sells short and there is still a balance on that mortgage, but that's not what the homeowner has gotten. What happens?
Well, one of two things. Unless you're told otherwise, you still owe that amount on your mortgage. Your lender can seek what's called a deficiency judgment, and somebody can come after you for the rest of that money. So if you're working with a realtor or another professional on a short sale, what you want to do is make sure that whatever you pay will be satisfaction in full for your debt. And something that's important about the administration's new program is if you work through their short sale program, it does require the lenders to accept that payment as satisfaction in full.
As satisfaction in full if you sell short.
If you sell short through that program, which does provide incentives to the lenders.
So if I have purchased a house for, say, $600,000, I can only sell it for $400,000. You're saying that under this program, the bank itself would have to swallow the $200,000, Renee.
Yeah, they would have to swallow that $200,000 loss, and the administration would give them some money, basically some benefit for doing so. Not they wouldn't cover the entire $200,000, but they would cover a portion of it. And I would actually to carry on what Julia was saying is that if you have a second mortgage, be particularly careful because what you sell your house for might not cover the primary mortgage, and it certainly won't cover the second mortgage.
I see.
And the second mortgage holder might come after you a year from now. So you have to make sure that the second lien holder signs off on the sale as well. And, you know, so don't assume, you know.
Wasn't there a court case about this just the other day? I thought I heard something on that. Ed, I want to come back to you. If you...
So does my bank.
Yeah, I bet. If you walked away from your house because you owe $20,000 or $30,000, isn't your bad credit going to follow you for the rest of your life?
That's a really good question, and it gets to an important point. My credit is already shot, truthfully. I mean, it was destroyed when I started missing payments in 2008. Now, I'm making payments now, but, you know, my credit score is just in a terrible shape, so it can't get much worse. A short sale will hit your credit score, too, by the way. It's not a whole lot different from a foreclosure. It's just cleaner and maybe a little less bad for your credit score. But in any case, I should say that most people, me included, you know, who are in trouble, they don't want to walk away from their homes. I really don't think a whole lot of people who are occupying their own homes truly want to be strategic defaulters. Economically, it makes sense, but it's hugely disruptive to your family. You feel terribly. It's disruptive to your life. You don't want to go there.
Ed Andrews of thephysicaltimes.com. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Want to raise another issue with all of you. We have heard from various callers and emailers that if you walk away from your home, if your credit score is bad, 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 that your next potential employer may look at that score, may look at that record, and that record could be held against you. Julia?
More and more employers are doing credit checks before they hire somebody. So this credit, ruining your credit score can have all sorts of anticipated and unanticipated consequences, you know, which is why, again, I would really encourage people, if your credit is good and you have the opportunity not to become delinquent on a loan, please don't.
Let's go now to Carthage, North Carolina. Good morning, Robert. You're on the air.
Good morning. That Center for Responsible Lending, that's nice, but how about a Center for Responsible Borrowing? Most of the people that I know can't afford their mortgages because they've bought something that they can't afford in the first place, and they have new cars and credit card payments. Ed there from the Fiscal Times should be ashamed of himself, and that's definitely a magazine that I won't be reading. How about teaching people to borrow within their means?
I think the caller is absolutely right. We had an enormous amount of irresponsible borrowing, and the book I wrote sort of took that as its departure point, that my borrowing was completely crazy and irresponsible. And my gut feeling is that as we went into the mortgage crisis, at least, you know, a very, very high percentage of the people who were in way over their heads knew at some level they were doing something stupid or unwise. But the environment and frankly, the industry, everything sort of conspired to encourage people to do dumb things. But irresponsible borrowing was, you know, absolutely a big part of this. The trouble is now, it's not just that. The unemployment situation has become the big driver for problems now. So it's a bad situation made worse.
Julia.
But Ed, I'm guessing that your lender didn't say to you, Ed, you really can't afford this, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. The lenders were out there peddling this stuff like candy. I've got a six-year-old. She would like to eat dessert every day, only dessert. I could just feed her only dessert and she would keep eating that. Then when she got sick, whose fault would that be, mine or hers? The lenders had the power in this situation to underwrite loans. That's their job. It is incredible that we have to talk about regulations that require lenders to check to make sure that the borrower can pay back their loan. I mean, isn't that their job?
Julia Gordon, we'll leave it at that. She is senior policy counsel for the Center for Responsible Lending. Renee Merle is reporter for The Washington Post. And Edmund Andrews is correspondent with thephysicaltimes.com and author of Busted. Good luck, especially to you, Ed. Thanks to all of you for being here. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.